Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Lena, Ohio, and earned a Master's of Public Administration from Western Michigan University. She's had a 30-year ministry within the hospice movement and served for 10 years as the CEO of Hospice of Michigan. She is considered a national expert in end-of-life care, organizational management, and the efficient delivery of healthcare services. Since 2008, she's been the president and CEO of the Michigan Women's Foundation. Her name, Carolyn Kasson. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Carolyn Kasson, the president and CEO of the Michigan Women's Foundation. Carolyn, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Well, I think I had one of those idyllic childhoods in the 50s. I grew up in Lima, Ohio, a small rural town in the northwest of Ohio, and it was a pretty uneventful, you know, kind of upbringing where you rode your bike every day. You stayed out till dark. Your mom called you in, and your world was a few square blocks. And I thought it was pretty wonderful. Gave me good foundational values, told me anyway, my mother told me every day that I could do anything I wanted to do, be anything I wanted to be, and achieve anything I wanted to achieve.
So that's the biggest thing your mom taught you. What was the biggest thing your dad taught you?
That I could be anything I wanted to be. My father had only a daughter, and so he taught me that, really there was no difference. I told him when I was about 7 or 8 years old that I wanted to be the first woman professional baseball player. And he told me that was fine. Let's start working on it. Let's start playing catch in the backyard, and let's start, going after that dream. And we did, and I decided that really wasn't my dream anymore. But the fact that he believed in me and that he told me that I could actually be the first woman professional baseball player in the United States, I think made me believe in myself.
What's the first job, Carolyn, you ever had?
I sold Christmas trees. I sold Christmas trees at down the street at there was a field, and people brought in their trees. I knew nothing. I was about 11 years old, 12 years old, and I really didn't know anything about Christmas trees except that we always had one. And what I learned was that I was pretty good at selling things, because I described how this tree was going to look when they got it into their living room, and how wonderful it would be, and all the wonderful memories that would go with this tree. And I sold a lot of trees, so every Christmas I sold Christmas trees after that.
You earned a BA in political science from Miami University, and then a master's of public administration from Western Michigan. How was it, Carolyn, you got into the ministry of hospice care?
I always like to run things. And so my political science, and I always cared about public policy a great deal. I was a child of the 60s, so I really thought that, that my marching on Washington and going to all those things that were happening in the 60s, all those events on campus, actually made a difference. I firmly believed that I helped stop the war in Vietnam. And so I wanted to do something that made a difference. I wasn't quite sure what that was when I went to Washington, D.C., but I got an up-close look at public policy by working for a U.S. senator. And that got me very excited about not only the political process, but the public policy process, all the things that go along with it, the writing of the right regulations. And so after I got married and settled down and was looking for a job, I had the opportunity to look at a group of grants that were in the field of hospice for the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. And it was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating because I thought they could change the world for dying patients. I thought that the world, that if we could just implement hospice in every community in the United States, we would have a safe, comfortable, and supportive dying process.
Who was the senator, and what was it like being a young lady walking throughout Washington, D.C.?
The senator was a senator named Vance Hartke. He was a senator from Indiana. And I got the job because I was a Midwesterner, and I actually knew where Fort Wayne, Indiana, and French Lick, Indiana was. It was really a geography quiz. The interview was a geography quiz. And I knew all those towns because I lived near them. And so it was very exciting. I never came to work one day in all the time I worked for the U.S. Senator that I wasn't proud of this country, that I wasn't proud of our political system and our political process, and that I didn't catch my breath every time I looked up at that U.S. Capitol and said, I work there.
French Lick, Indiana, the home of Larry Bird.
That's right. That's right. You had to like a little basketball to work for the senator from Indiana.
Tell us about the Hospice of Michigan. You were the CEO for 10 years, from 1988 to 1998.
The Hospice of Michigan was a dream of a great many people, starting back in the 1980s, when a group of physicians, nurses, social workers, chaplains wanted to get together and to figure out that there was a better way for patients in this community to die, that we could be more compassionate, we could be more caring, we could do better at pain control and symptom control. We could surround every single person who was facing the end of life with support and love, and we could honor their life and provide them with some dignity in the dying process. And so they put together a wonderful hospice called the Hospice of Southeast Michigan and became a nationally known Blue Cross Blue Shield demonstration project. I simply had the privilege of coming in the late 1980s and taking it to the next level when we made it a very large, successful program. And then we merged ourselves with 17 other hospices around the state to create the nation's largest not-for-profit hospice program. And the hospice program that covered, the first hospice program in the country that covered a whole state. And now it's gone on to even greater heights. And through my good friend Dottie Deramo, who is the CEO there. I'm so proud to see what she accomplished and what she took. She kind of took the handoff from me and made it into an even more exciting and wonderful program that covers the entire state of Michigan now.
We're talking to Carolyn Casson. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Carolyn Casson. And in 1999, she became the COO of VistaCare, the nation's second largest hospice program. Talk about that episode of your life.
Well, that was my transition into the world of for-profit healthcare. I had spent all my professional life up until then working in the nonprofit system and thinking that if you could just get all your colleagues to work together, you could change the world. That seemed to be a process that was going along well, but that we could possibly do it faster if we had some venture capital money and that we could create a national company as we had created here in Michigan with not-for-profit programs. And so I took an offer to run with a man who had put in a lot of his own money. He had already taken a couple companies public, and he offered to allow me to run this national company. We bought up 47 hospice programs all over the country. And I spent the next 3 or 4 years on the road, going from community to community throughout the United States where we had bought these programs, helping them understand what high-quality hospice care was, helping them develop relationships within the community, helping them understand what something we called open access, meaning that everybody should have access to this hospice program, and developing the brand of VistaCare. And that was extraordinarily exciting. The company ultimately went public and was sold to another very large hospice provider in the United States. So that was a great adventure. And you'll see it kind of little by little leads me to kind of where I am today.
We're talking to Carolyn Casson, and she's had a 30-year ministry with hospice care. Carolyn, you've sat at the deathbed of thousands of people.
I have.
What's that experience like?
Humbling. It's an experience that causes you to think about your own life every day. I always said, I think one of the reasons I spent 30 years in hospice is that I needed to learn this lesson over and over and over again. I needed to remember that what matters are the people that you love, not how much money you make, not how much success you've had, because at the end of life, sitting at the deathbed of a dying patient, nobody remembers any of that. Nobody talks about that. We're all equalized, and we're all just about whose lives we've touched, what legacy we're going to leave behind, and what people will say about us, and how we've touched other people's lives. And so at the bedside of every patient, I learned that lesson over and over and over again.
Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation.
Yes.
You've been at the bedside of a lot of these greatest generation. Talk to us about The Greatest Generation.
This generation is almost gone, you know. This generation that served in World War II, that came of age during the Depression, they were a very special group of people. You know, they gave us, I think, unprecedented wealth, you know, both kind of spiritually, positive. They believed in this country. They believed in this, in our society. They believed in a culture, a can-do culture. I mean, they really created the world we live in today. And you know, my mother and father included, they were people who made a huge difference. And so that's kind of the positive side of the Greatest Generation. I think maybe the downside of this generation was that they also didn't ask for what they needed, didn't ask for what they wanted. They acquiesced sometimes. Sometimes I watched them go through treatment that they perhaps would have stopped, that I think the baby boomers will do a very different job doing things that maybe their children wanted them to do rather than saying what they wanted. So their experiences at end of life were often very quiet, positively going quietly into the good night kind of experiences. They were people who believed what the doctor told them and did what the doctor said. And yet they also left an enormous legacy to those of us who were there, are their children and their grandchildren.
I've often heard that the loved one, when they're dying, all they want is to have their loved ones around them. I've been honored to be able to do that for both my parents. And I think I got more out of being at that deathbed than my mom or dad. Now, they had a very strong faith, so they knew where they were going. But talk about the people at the deathbed, the loved ones, what it does for them.
Well, each person is different. I have to say, I have seen many people who want to do this alone, who want to spare their children the last moments of life. And I've watched many people hold on until their son or daughter go out of the room, and then they do go quietly or take that last breath. I've seen many, many people, though, who want only to say thank you, I love you, and to the people that they love, and they want them around. They want, and they get such tremendous energy from that. The real privilege for somebody who works in hospice, as any of your listeners could tell you, is that you get to be a part of something that is incredibly precious. It's like being at the birth of a child. You know, being the death of someone is powerful. It is the culmination of this life. And it can be a lot of fun. It can be tearful. It can be joyous. It can be very memorable. And that's what we always try to create in hospice, is to say what you've always wanted to say. If you haven't said it before, say it now. That you've always wanted to say to your mother, your father, or your grandparent, or whoever this person is, your friend, and make sure that you say it over and over again, because they can hear you and they can feel your presence even if they can't respond.
For someone who has a very strong faith, it is a birth to the ultimate championship.
Yes.
That's what they believe. The people that don't have a faith, you've been around those types as they've passed.
I have.
What is that like for them?
Sometimes it is very frightening. And so I always felt that our job in hospice was to build a very safe, secure, and loving environment for them. So that while they didn't know exactly where they were going, or they weren't sure, they knew that they were loved while they were here on Earth. They knew that their life mattered. They knew that they would be remembered while that they were here on Earth. And that if we could do that, we had done something very special for someone who didn't have a vision of what the next life was going to be like.
If there's a listener tonight that says, Carolyn, I'm old, I'm breaking down, I'm useless, I'm a burden to my family, I just want to die, what do you say to them?
Well, people have said that to me, and I have said to them, because I believe this so strongly, is that you're wrong. You are not a burden to us. You are not a burden to the hospice. This is what we do. This is why we went into this. This is what our mission in life is. And so you aren't a burden to us. In fact, you're our reason for being. You are why we exist, is to care for you, to love you, to support you, to care for you, to make sure that you're well cared for. So you aren't a burden. You aren't, yes, you may be old. You may not be the same kind of use you were when you were working, doing radio shows or whatever it was you did. But you are very valuable to our staff, because we never, ever had one patient who I didn't learn something from, who I didn't sit in awe of what they had done. You just need to hear those stories. And so I would always ask people who said that to me, you need to tell me your story. You need to write it down. You need to say it into a microphone. You need to just sit here and let me listen to you, who you are, so that I can remember you, and that you will never go unremembered.
When we come back, we'll ask Carolyn Casson about her latest chapter, the Michigan Women's Foundation. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything is Possible. And we're talking to Carolyn Casson, the president and CEO of the Michigan Women's Foundation. Carolyn, talk to us about the Michigan Women's Foundation.
Well, the Michigan Women's Foundation is... really should be, theme song should really be Anything is Possible, because that's really what the Women's Foundation stands for women and young girls, is that their life can be anything and everything that they want it to be, and we are here to help them make that possible. So I love the title of the show. I'm going to steal shamelessly from you and talk about our organization as the Anything is Possible organization from now on.
When you started it in 2008, you talked about the power of 100 women.
Well, I didn't start the Michigan Women's Foundation. It actually started back in 1986. A wonderful group of 30 women got together Some of these names, you know, many of your listeners would know. Helen Millican, actually Betty Ford, who just died, as you know, was one of these women who was very active in our early phase of development. Millie Jeffries, women who really believed that women needed a unique organization so that they could achieve things outside of kind of the regular foundation. The regular foundations were good foundations, but they were not focusing on issues that pertain to women and girls. So they put their money where their mouth was. They talked about it, but they also put their own resources into this foundation, created an endowment that has allowed this foundation to exist for the last almost 25 years now.
If you want to learn more, www.miwf.org. www.miwf.org. A good friend of mine, Alonzo McDonald's been on the show a couple times, a brilliant man. And one time we were having a meal, and he said, Jack, what's been the single biggest common denominator of these 325-plus guests? And I said, enthusiasm, passion, they found their mission in life, on and on and on. And finally, a half an hour into this, he pulled out of me that the biggest single common denominator was that every one of these guests has had a fabulous mom. Some, Carolyn, never met the dad. Some, the dad was great. Some, the dad was mediocre. But everyone had a special mom. Why is that true?
I believe everybody has a special mom, whether they are her biological mother or not. Every successful woman has someone who believes in her. And I think that's the common denominator that moms kind of bring to the table, is that they unconditionally love us. And they make sure that no matter what they know, their child knows that we believe in them. And that's, I think, what the essence of motherhood is. The essence of successful women, and men too, I would have to say, is that they know those two things, that they are unconditionally loved, and that they are believed in, they can do anything they want to do. So we find that there are so many women in our society today who haven't had that unconditional love. At least they don't know they did. And they maybe haven't had anybody telling them, you can do anything you want to do. And so one of the things that the Michigan Women's Foundation has taken upon itself with our Power of 100 Women, which are this is a group that we started a couple years ago, to create this kind of support, mentoring, networking, and financial resources for the women in the state of Michigan. And this group is growing and growing. We now have more than 150 women. We're, by the end of this year, we'll have more than 200 women who are going to be that kind of mother figure in a way, but really more than that, more like a mentor, giving them advice, helping them, and making sure that they know they can do and be anything they want to be.
So many single moms today, and it's very tough for them to have tough love with their children. Talk to us about unconditional love and at the same time, tough love.
It seems to me that that the most successful women have had mothers who had very high standards for them and really held them accountable for those high standards. It's one thing to say, get good grades. It's another to say you're grounded if you don't get good grades. And I think those are the sorts of things that we as mentors to women, whether you're a formal mentor or an informal mentor, you're an aunt, whether you're just somebody who cares deeply about the little girl that lives down the street, you're saying to her, you matter to me. You are somebody who I want to succeed. And it's not acceptable for you to be doing some of the things that you do. You have to make sure that you're getting to class. You're getting to class on time. Those are the kinds of accountability things that we're doing both with young girls through our middle school programs, our high school girl programs, and now what we call our next generation programs. And those Power of 100 Women are being that kind of accountability filter for those girls.
Once again, the Michigan Women's Foundation, www.miwf.org. Carolyn, how does a young person today get this self-esteem?
Well, if you don't get it naturally and you don't get it at home, you don't get it in school, you have to get it from somewhere, or I think you end up not being a productive member of society that is happy, healthy, and you know, and that contributes in whatever way, you know, your talents allow you to contribute. So the Michigan Women's Foundation is trying to figure out a way that we can identify problems that keep girls from succeeding. What are those, and what do we need to solve? What things keep girls from having self-esteem? We look at it as, what is the problem that needs to be solved, and what do we need as an organization to do to lead? Because we have the resources, both the human resources with this incredible group of 100 women, and then this great board of women statewide, and this and these resources that women previously have left us to distribute and to have huge social impact on the whole continuum of girls, and make sure that we leave this world, and this is kind of why it's my new mission. You can see how it all kind of fits together, is that we leave this world a better place, because women do have self-esteem, they do have the courage to succeed, and they do have the courage to lead.
We're talking to Carolyn Kasson. Carolyn, if there's a young listener tonight with a college degree who's unemployed or underemployed, would love to have a job that they have the passion for, but hasn't been able to find it, what do you say to that person?
I'd say create that job. I'd say go out and figure out what it is that you love to do, that you're very good at, and figure out how you can make that job happen. Because, you know, I think the jobs are not all right there waiting for us that are right for us. I learned very early on that you have to do whatever is put in front of you. And if you're a college graduate and you don't have a job, but you can do something, you could volunteer, you can, you know, go to an organization that needs your help and get some experience. You can go to an organization and say, let me do something that you need doing, or let me do something that I think needs doing, and let's see if eventually we can create kind of job. Or alternatively, I'd like to talk a little bit more about this idea of women-owned businesses, where we can change the world by women creating an entrepreneurial venture for themselves.
We're talking to Carolyn Kasson. When we come back, we'll ask her about the latest venture, Bell Capital Management, LLC. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Carolyn Kasson, whose latest venture is the co-founder and co-manager of Bell Capital, B-E-L-L-E Capital, a woman's venture fund. Carolyn, what does that mean? French Lick, Indiana, I don't know if they had any women's venture funds.
They did not, as a matter of fact. There are only about 9 other funds like this in the United States. It's a women's venture fund. It's actually an angel fund where all of the investors are women, and we invest only in women-owned or women-led businesses. We focus on businesses here in the state of Michigan, but we are willing to go throughout the Midwest and even into the South if there's a good women-owned business that that we believe deserves our investment.
What does angel fund investing mean?
Angel fund investing is that period between a good idea for a company where you spend your own money. Maybe you tap your parents or your children or somebody for a little bit of money to get you started. And then it's not quite big enough to go to the bank for financing yet, or it's not quite big enough to go to a venture capital firm to invest in. In between there, there are things called angels, angel investors. Sometimes they invest individually. They invest $25,000 to $150,000 to $250,000 in a company, and they take equity or ownership of that company, part of it. So you lose total control of your company, but in return, you gain this whole group of incredible women that will help your company succeed. About a year ago, the Michigan Women's Foundation started the quest to develop an angel fund, and Bell Capital is the result of that. The Michigan Women's Foundation also wanted to have its own angel loan fund, so you can either get capital and allow us to take a part of your business through Bell Capital and help you create, surround you with these incredible women who will help you succeed, or you can take out a loan from the Michigan Women's Foundation and pay back that loan, and we'll help you with our Power of 100 Women to make sure that you succeed. It's very, very exciting.
If a woman wants to learn more,
if she wants to know more about Bell Capital, this would have to be a very high growth company that, you know, that might get sold or go public one day. She would go to Bell VC, and we called it Bell Capital because making money is beautiful, you know. So BELLEVC.com. If you want to know more about the Angel Fund through the Michigan Women's Foundation, you go to MIWF.org.
When we had lunch a while back, you use that same quote, making money is beautiful. Carolyn, I've known some women who say that spending money is beautiful. I'm just joking. What do you mean when you say making money is beautiful?
Women have, as you know, I know you know the statistic that women control about 85% of the economy and the buying decisions in this country. But when we go to start a business, we started with far less money than a similar business started by a man. And we only get about 4% of the venture capital that is distributed in the United States each year. So when I say making money is beautiful, I mean that women need to step up. They need to learn how to be investors, just like men know how to invest in these companies. They need to learn how to actually pick a good company, help it, shape it, and make it succeed. And then they need to reap those benefits. They need to be the early stage investors in a lot of these companies that have made many, many men very, very rich. So that's what we mean by making money is beautiful. We want to be very, very rich too.
Carolyn Casson, talk to us about leadership.
Leadership has always been one of the most important themes in my life. I had the privilege of being a Kellogg Foundation Leadership Fellow back in the 1980s, and didn't really think of myself as a leader, I don't think, until somebody told me that I was a leader. And once somebody tells you that you're a leader, I think you learn to live up to that. And so I think leadership is what we need to tell our young girls and the young women in our life, and our colleagues and friends too, is that you're a leader. You don't always know you're a leader. You don't know that somebody else is watching you. You don't know that somebody else is considering what you said, how importantly they consider that. And so I think instilling leadership in young girls is one of the most important things we can do for them today, and making sure they know that they're a leader in their classroom, they're a leader at school, they're a leader at church, they're a leader on the playground, they're a leader everywhere.
Carolyn, what makes a great leader?
I think it's having a passion for something, wanting to see things be better, making sure that there is that you have created a respect and a love and a support for whoever you're working with, so that when you turn around, there are actually people following you. I think some people who think they're leaders have never turned around to see whether anybody, are they just telling them to do it because they have to, or do people naturally follow you? What I see in a lot of young girls is that there are a lot of natural leaders out there. We just need to channel it. We just need to make sure that they know that that people do look to them, they listen to them, and that we have to make sure that they're using that in the right way.
Carolyn, if there's a listener tonight that says, wow, this woman has a zest for life, enthusiastic, positive. I used to be like that, but I lost my spouse, or I lost a child. Mm. And I've lost that zest for life. I've lost that enthusiasm. I've lost me. What do you say?
Well, I say that you're never going to be the same. Because when you lose someone you love, you lose a part of you. You lose a piece of you. And you never are the same person. But so I guess I wouldn't ask you to go back and get that same zest for life back, because it's probably not ever going to be quite the same. But there's something there that is important that you do. You have been left behind, and so there's a reason for that, and you need to figure out what that is and what you need to teach, what you need to do to live, to enjoy life, because I assure you, that's what you're here for. You're here to contribute in some way, in some very important and very significant way. So please don't give up on yourself, because we need whatever it is that's inside of you, that passion, that enthusiasm, that excitement, which will be different now than it was.
What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, besides anything is possible, I think I would say the most important thing you can do is go out and figure out what it is you love, who you are as a person, what your passions are. What gets you up in the morning? When you get up, what do you think about? What do you want to accomplish? What do you want to do? And make sure that you find a way to do that. Find a way to start that business. Find a way to do that job. Find a way to use all of that energy and enthusiasm and excitement in your life's work. And you'll be a very happy and successful leader.
Carolyn Casson, what a terrific role model of a dreamer who regularly has turned her dreams into reality. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.